Today, we begin with the tenfold skill in giving attention. So, the first set of instructions is the recitation. First, verbal recitation, and then mental recitation, and then view them as to color, as to shape, as to direction, as to location, as to delimitation. And these are called the sevenfold skill in learning. So first we have to learn the meditation subject. And now come the tenfold skill in giving attention. So they are, one, following the order, two, not too quickly, and three, not too slowly, four, two, warding off distraction, five, surmounting the concept, six, successive leaving, seven, absorption, and 8 to 10, the three discourses, or three suttantas. So first, following the order. So from the time of beginning the recitation, attention should be given following the serial order without skipping. So you must go from 1 to 32 and then back from 32 to 1. So you are not to skip any one of them when you recite. And the second is when you recite, you are not to do too quickly. Because when you do it too quickly, you will not remember them. Like a man when going on a journey, even if he has already done that journey out and back 100 times rapidly without taking note of turnings to be taken and avoided. Though he may finish his journey, he still has to ask how to get there. We may be going to a place many times, but we don't know, we may not know how to go there, especially when we are not driving. So you have to go not too quickly so that you remember all of them. And then the third is not too slowly. If you do it too slowly, then you will not come to the end of the recitation. Just like a man who loiters on the way among trees, rocks, pools, etc., will not finish the journey in the day. So a meditator gives his attention to the meditation subject too slowly, he does not get to the end, and it does not become a condition for distinction. A condition for distinction means a condition for progress. And distinction here means progress in meditation, including the realization of truth. The Pali word is visesa, and this word is used many times with regard to meditation. So it means something new or something special. That means when we practice meditation, we discover one thing after another, and these discoveries are called visesa or special. Before we practice meditation, we did not know about, say, breathing or parts of the body. Then after we practice meditation, we get samadhi or concentration, and so we begin to see things differently from when we did not meditate. So these are called distinctions or special attainments or something. So this word will appear again and again in this book. And always it is translated as distinction in this translation. So if we go too slowly, then we will not reach to the end of the meditation, and so it will not become a condition for progress, a condition for realization of truth. And then warding off distraction. He must ward off temptation to drop the meditation subject and to let his mind get distracted among the variety of external objects. So he must pay attention to the parts he is concentrating on, but not let his mind to be distracted to other objects. And when mind is often distracted, then he will not get to the stage of realization. And here it is compared to a man going on 1 foot wide cliff path. So he must be very careful and he must not be distracted, because if he's distracted, he will fall down into the cliff, off the cliff, and then he will die. So he should give his attention to warding off distraction. And then surmounting the concept. This name concept, beginning with head hairs, body hairs, must be surmounted and consciousness established on the aspect repulsive. Now, in the beginning, we cannot avoid concepts because we live in the conventional world and we have to use conventional terms like head hairs, body hairs, and so on. And in the beginning, we will be seeing the hairs, nails, teeth, skin, which are called concepts. But we have to surmount, we have to go beyond the convention, beyond the concepts. If we just see the head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, and so on, if we just see the appearance or picture of these parts, we will not get the notion that they are repulsive. And the purpose of this meditation is to arouse repulsiveness of these parts. So we have to go beyond the concept of head hairs, body hairs, and so on. So when a person begins to meditate and after some time he gets enough concentration, he will be able to surmount the concept and establish his mind on the repulsiveness of these parts. So we have to see, or we have to arrive at repulsiveness of these parts, not stop at just the parts, not like learning these parts, but trying to see repulsiveness in these parts, not like medical students. And then the next one is successive leaving. And in giving his attention, he should eventually leave out any parts that do not appear to him. That means that do not appear to his mind clearly, that he does not see clearly in his mind. Although the meditator tries to see them in his mind, some parts may not become clear to him, or he may not see clearly some parts. So his attention, in giving his attention, he should eventually leave out any parts that do not appear to him, that is, to him clearly. For when a beginner gives his attention to head hairs, his attention then carries on till it arrives at the last part. So, because he is familiar with these 32 parts, so he recites and he pays attention, and then his mind goes to the end and then come back and forth. But some parts may not appear to his mind clearly. So he should drop which we do not appear clearly in his mind. So he must take only those that are clear to him. So this is called successive leaving. So leaving one after the other until you arrive at the last one. As he persists in giving his attention thus, some parts appear to him and others do not. Then he should work on those that have appeared till one out of any two appears the clearer. So he drops one by one until there are only two that are clearest to him, and then he tries to find out which is clearer among these two. So he should arouse absorption by again and again giving attention to the one that has appeared thus. So eventually he ended with one part which is clearest to him. And then a simile is given here with the 32 palms and then a monkey and so on. And also another simile is given in paragraph 70. A monk going for alms round in a village where there are 32 families or 32 houses. So here, alms food eater simply means a monk who goes for alms round. Most monks in the olden days and even now go for alms every morning. So such a monk is called here alms food eater. But actually, whether a monk eats at the monastery food brought by his devotees, or he goes out collecting alms in the village, he eats alms food. So every monk is an alms food eater. But here, alms food eater really means a monk who goes out for alms. Or, I do not want to use the word beg. Because monks do not beg. Although the word bhikkhu, the Pali word bhikkhu, means one who begs. Here, begging means just going around the village silently, and whatever is given to him, he accepts. He does not say, please give me food or something like that. That is not allowed for monks to do. So the alms food eater really means a monk who goes for alms in the village every day. So he might go to a village with 32 families, and then he got two lots of alms at the first house, then he will drop one house. If he gets three lots at one house, he will drop another house and so on. And on the third day, he got his bowl full at the first house, then he will not go any further. He will he go to sitting hall. So these are the same ways. In the same way, a meditator must go through these 32 parts and then drop one by one that are not clear to him. Now, in the application of this simile, paragraph 71, the 32 aspects are like the village with the 32 families. The meditator is like the alms food eater. The meditator's preliminary work is like the alms food eater's going to live near the village. Actually, living near the village or living depending on the village. What do you say there? Say, I live in a monastery, but I depend on this village for my food. How do you say that? Living depending on the village, or what do you say?
Relying
on the village for support. And then number 7, as to absorption. Absorption means jhana. So absorption part by part. There are 32 parts. So taking one part and you practice meditation on it, and you can get jhana. So the intention here is this. It should be understood that absorption is brought about in each one of the parts. So you can get 32 times of jhana if you take one part at a time. Say you take the part head hairs and then practice on it, meditation on it, and you get jhana. And then you can take body hairs as the object of meditation, and then practice meditation, and you may get jhana again, something like that. So at the end of it, we have a story of a monk who gained jhana, dwelling on all the 32 parts. And the three suttantas, now, a yogi must study these three suttas, the three discourses. And they are from the Sutta Pitaka, a collection of suttas. Namely, those on higher consciousness, that is one sutta. On coolness, that is another sutta. And on skill in the enlightenment factors, that is still another sutta. As they have published the linking of energy with concentration. So the first sutta is, because there are three signs that should be given attention from time to time by a bhikkhu, intent on higher consciousness. Higher consciousness we here means shamatha and vipassana.
Both.
Yeah. So a monk who is intent on higher consciousness, that means who is practicing samatha meditation or vipassana meditation, should give attention from time to time to these three signs. The first is the sign of concentration. Now, the sign of concentration really means just concentration or the object of concentration. In the sub-commentary, it is commented that sign of concentration simply means concentration. Pay attention to concentration or the object of concentration. And the sign of exertion, the same thing. Here, the sign of energy or the sign of effort should be given attention from time to time. And the sign of equanimity, the same thing. Equanimity itself or the object of equanimity should be given attention from time to time. Because if a bhikkhu intent on higher consciousness gives attention only to the sign of concentration, then his consciousness may conduce to idleness. Now, too much concentration causes idleness. Something like lethargy or sometimes sleepiness.
Is that both for vipassana and shamatha, or is it just for shamatha?
Both for shamatha and vipassana. Too much concentration means concentration in excess of exertion or effort. When you get too much concentration, you simply lose effort or exertion, or exertion becomes less. So in that case, too much of concentration leads to idleness, leads to sleepiness or something. You are not tired, but you feel sleepy, or you feel what do you call that? Lethargic or something like that. So too much concentration is actually as bad as too little concentration, because as we have learned in the previous chapters, they must be balanced. The five faculties must be balanced when you practice meditation. Mm-hmm. And especially, concentration must be balanced by effort. And too much effort will cause some, what? Too much effort to agitation. Now, if you have effort or exertion in excess of concentration, then agitation will come in.
What's the word for concentration? Is sati?
Concentration is samadhi.
Oh, samadhi, not
right.
Sati.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sati is mindfulness. So when there is too much energy, too much virya, then there is agitation.
The example, like Ananda near his enlightenment.
Oh yeah.
Too much.
Yes. Ananda was practicing meditation to become an arahant. He was so too eager, and he put too much effort. He walked up and down and practiced meditation so that he would become an arahant. But he couldn't achieve anything by that practice. So later on he stopped and reviewed his practice, and he saw that he had too much effort. So he slowed down, and then he was able to attain arahantship. So too much effort is also not good. And then if you pay too much attention to the sign of equanimity, what's that?
Fall asleep.
If a bhikkhu intend on higher consciousness to give attention only to the sign of equanimity, then his consciousness may not become rightly concentrated for the destruction of kankas. Because it leads to what do you call that? Delusion. It leads to not knowing, ignorance. Because equanimity is close to ignoring. So when you ignore something, you become ignorant. But equanimity is not ignoring, actually. It takes as object the thing, and he is not attached to it or not repulsed by it. And that is what is called equanimity. And there is another thing which is wrongly called equanimity, but actually it is not, and that is ignoring. Sometimes you ignore something and you say, I am with equanimity about that thing. But that is not equanimity, just ignoring. So too much of equanimity can lead to that ignoring, and so ignorance can come in. And then there can be no destruction of kankas or mental defilements. So a monk should pay attention from time to time, sometimes to the sign of concentration, sometimes to the sign of exertion, and sometimes to the sign of equanimity. And then there is a simile of the goldsmith. The second sutta on page 267, paragraph 77 is, bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu possesses six things, he is able to realize a supreme coolness of his mind. What six? Here, because when consciousness should be restrained, he restrains it. So there are times when you have to restrain your mind. You are too elated or too happy with your practice, and if you are too elated and too happy, you will lose concentration. So you have to something like suppress your mind or restrain your mind. So when consciousness should be restrained, he restrains it. When it should be exerted, he exerts it. When consciousness should be encouraged, he encourages it. When consciousness should be looked on at with equanimity, he looks on at it with equanimity. And he is resolute on the superior state to be attained. He delights in Nibbana. Possessing these six things, a bhikkhu is able to realize the supreme coolness. So a person must know when to encourage his mind, when to suppress his mind, when to exert, and all these things. Then the third sutta is called the skill in the enlightenment factors. It is already dealt with in the explanation of skill and absorption, so chapter 4, paragraphs 51, 57. In the passage beginning, because when the mind is slack, that is not the time for developing the tranquility, enlightenment factor, and so on. So the meditator should make sure that he has apprehended this sevenfold skill in learning well, and has properly defined this tenfold skill in giving attention, thus learning the meditation subject properly with both kinds of skill. So whenever something is described in this book, it is described in detail and in very serious manner. So before you practice and this meditation, first you have to learn the 32 parts by heart and then recite, and then you have to learn these skills. Skills in learning and skill in practice. So now comes the real practice. Oh, and there is a footnote here. PM explains. PM means the sub-commentary of Visuddhimagga. Sati Sati Ayatani, that is the Pali original, rendered here by whenever there is occasion, with tasmin tasmin pubba hetu adi karane sati, when there is this or that reason consisting in a previous cause. Actually, it should be when there is this or that cause accumulated in previous lives. Not previous cause, but accumulated in previous lives. It is something like a parami or paramita.
A paramita?
Yeah. We call paramita the accumulated experience through the previous lives.
Perfections,
right. Now we come to the real practice. If it is convenient for him to live in the same monastery as the teacher, then he need not get it explained in detail thus. But as he applies himself to the meditation subject after he has made quite sure about it, he can have each successive stage explained as he reaches each distinction. So as he reaches each stage, he may go to his teacher and ask about the other aspect. One who wants to live elsewhere, however, must get it explained to him in detail in the way already given. And he must turn it over and over, getting all the difficulties solved. He should leave an abode of an unsuitable kind, as described in the description of the earth cassette, and go to live in a suitable one. So, then he should sever the minor impediments and set about the preliminary work for giving attention to repulsiveness. So he should prepare properly for the practice of meditation. Avoid the unsuitable monasteries and live in a monastery which is suitable for meditation, and then sever the minor impediments. If his hair is long, he should cut his hair. If his nails are long, he cut his nails. And if his robes are soiled or dirty, then he should wash them, clean them, and so on. So that there is not even lesser impediments for the practice of meditation. And then he should set about it, when he sets about it, he should first apprehend the learning sign in head hairs. How? And then comes the description of these. So the kala should be defined first by plucking out one or two head hairs and placing them on the palm of the hand. He can look at them in hair cutting place. That means in the monastery we cut hair of each other, and so the cut hair may still be at that place. So you can go there and pick up a hair or two and look at them. Or in a bowl of water or rice gruel. Sometimes there's hair in the rice gruel or in a bowl of water. So you look at it. If the ones he sees are black, when he sees them, they should be brought to mind as black. If white, as white. If mixed, they should be brought to mind in accordance with those most prevalent. So there are more black, then you say black. There are more white, you say white. And as in the case of head hair, so too the sign should be apprehended visually with the whole of the skin pendant. That is the first five. Having apprehended the sign thus, and defined all the other parts of the body by color, shape, direction, location, and delimitation, he should then define repulsiveness in five ways. That is by color, shape, odor, habitat, and location. And now we come to the individual parts. So the first is head hairs. And in the description of these 32 parts, there are words which are very difficult, because here the commentator describes each part, comparing with what were familiar to them in those days. And also there are names of trees and flowers which we don't know. So let's see the head hairs. Firstly, head hairs are black in their normal color. So the color is black, normal color. Maybe because the other was an Indian, and most Eastern people have black hair, he said that their normal color is black. But it may be different in the West. The color of fresh areca seeds, the areca seeds. So maybe we don't know what the name of the tree called areca. From this tree, we get seeds of beads. We make beads with the seeds of this tree. They are black. As to shape, they are the shape of long round measuring rods. As to direction, they lie in the upper direction. Direction means part of the body, and the navel is the middle of the body, and upper direction means above navel, and lower direction means below navel. As to location, their location is the wet inner skin that envelopes the skull. It is bounded on both sides by the roots of the ears, in front by the forehead, and behind by the nape of the neck. As to delimitation, they are bounded below by the surface of their own roots, which are fixed by entering to the amount of the tip of a rice grain into the inner skin that envelopes the head. Just a little bit. They are bounded above by space and all around by each other. There are no two hairs together. This is their delimitation by the similar. Head hairs are not body hairs, and body hairs are not what head hairs. Being likewise not intermixed with the remaining 31 parts, the head hairs are a separate part. This is their delimitation by dissimilar. There are two kinds of delimitation, by similar and by dissimilar. So by dissimilar means head hairs are not body hairs are not head hairs. They are separate parts, they are different. And then, determination as to repulsiveness in five ways. Head hairs are repulsive in color as well as in shape, odor, habitat, and location. What is habitat? What is the difference between habitat and location?
Habitat has to do with the interrelationship of other factors within the same area. Location doesn't have that interrelated aspect with other factors within the same area, I think.
In the sub-commentary, habitat, or the Pali word asaya, is explained as an origin or cause. If you grow some plants, then the plant grows on the earth, and it gets nutrition from the earth. Mm-hmm. That is called asaya in Pali, because we have to differentiate asaya and the other one. I mean, habitat and location. So we will read this paragraph. For one, seeing the color of a head hair in a bowl of inviting rice gruel or cooked rice, people are disgusted and say, this has got hairs, and they take it away. So they are repulsive in color. Also, when people are eating at night, they are likewise disgusted by the mere sensation of a hair-shaped eka bark or makari bark fiber. They are names of trees. So they are repulsive in shape. And the odor of head hairs, unless dressed with the smearing of oil, scented with flowers, etc., is most offensive, and it is still worse when they are put in the fire. Even if head hairs are not directly repulsive in color and shape, still their odor is directly repulsive. Just as a baby's excrement as to its color is the color of turmeric, and as to its shape, it is the shape of a piece of turmeric root. And just as the bloated carcass of a black dog thrown on a rubbish heap as to its color is the color of a ripe palmyra fruit, and as to its shape is the shape of a mandolin-shaped drum left face down, and its fangs are like jasmine buds. So even if both these are not directly repulsive in color and shape, still their odor is directly repulsive. So do even if head hairs are not directly repulsive in color and shape, still their odor is directly repulsive. Now, I think instead of but, we can say and, or we can just leave the but. Just as pot herbs that grow on village sewage in a filthy place are disgusting, because this is description about with regard to habitat. So just as pot herbs that grow on village sewage in a filthy place are disgusting to civilized people and unusable, so also head hairs are disgusting, since they grow on the sewage of past blood, urine, dung, bile, phlegm, and the like. So they grow out of them. That is repulsive with regard to habitat. And these head hairs grow on the heap of other 31 parts, as fungus do on a dunghill. And owing to the filthy place they grow in, they are quite as unappetizing as vegetables growing on a charnel ground, on a midden, etc., and lotuses or water lilies growing in drains and so on. This is the repulsive aspect of their location. So their location is repulsive, and also their habitat or their origin is repulsive. So repulsive with regard to origin and repulsive with regard to location. As in the case of head hairs, so also the repulsiveness of all the parts should be defined in the same five ways: by color, shape, odor, habitat, and location. Here also, I want to leave the word however out. So we may say moreover or and. All must be defined individually by color, shape, direction, location, and delimitation as follows. Next, body hairs. So they are not difficult to understand. Head hairs, body hairs, nails also. And then teeth. There are 32 two bones in one whose teeth are complete. Is that right?
Yes.
32 teeth?
Yes.
They too are white in color. As to shape, they are of various shapes. And then describe. So these descriptions are like a textbook of anatomy. Then the next one, skin. And here the skin means inner skin, not the outer skin. Because the inner skin envelopes the whole body. Outside it is what is called the outer cuticle, which is black, brown, or yellow in color. And when that from the whole of the body is compressed together, it amounts to only as much as a jute fruit, a small fruit, a fruit kernel. So, what is outermost is not called skin. It is called
cuticle.
And under that, there is skin. Sometimes we have a sole or something here, and then that cuticle become removed, and then there is skin out.
like the pig, when a pig is killed, put it into the hot water, they brush the outer of the skin cuticle, and the skin becomes white.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
They also say that another, to make it more repulsive, that the cuticle is dead, you know, all this, what we call skin, what we see, is dead. That is said in another commentary.
I don't know, it's outermost sheet.
Yeah.
Leukoderma is the real skin. There's no pigmentation, loss of pigmentation, loss of cuticle. Becomes leukoderma, and leukoderma is white color. That is the actual skin.
Oh. So it is, here it is that the skin is white color. But as to color, the skin itself is white, and its whiteness becomes evident when the outer cuticle is destroyed by contact with the flame of a fire or the impact of a blow, and so on. So when you cut the cell, then you see the white color there. And then about 5 lines down from paragraph 94, we have the skin of the thighs is the shape of a long sack of full of paddy. Paddy really means uncooked rice without husks. And the next one is flesh. There are 900 pieces of flesh. Muscles and other things. As to color, it is all red like kintsugi flowers. As to shape, the flesh of the cow to the shape of cooked rice and a family bag and so on. And then sinews. There are 900 sinews. I don't know how they count these sinews. Because maybe monks do not dissect bodies. They may have learned them from physicians. And then color and so on. And about the middle of the paragraph, there's the word tendons. Are tendons larger sinews? No? You see the word there?
What is sinews? Yes, sorry. What is sinews in Burmese?
A jaw.
Tendons, they may be the same. Mm.
But here, the Pali word means larger sinews. Sinews are small, and larger sinews are called here Pali Gandhara, and it is translated as tendons here. So I think tendons are bigger than sinews. And the next one is bones. And there are, excepting the 32 teeth bones, these consist of the remaining number of bones. Did you add them up? Did you get 300? I did. So there are 300. It's correct. So 64 hand bones, 64 foot bones, 64 soft bones dependent on the flesh, 2 heel bones, then in each leg, 2 ankle bones, so they become 4. 2 shin bones, 4. 1 knee bone, 2. And 1 thigh bone, 2. And then 2 hip bones, 18 spine bones. Are there 18 segments in the spine? What do you call them in the spine?
Vertebrae?
Yeah. No. Are there 18?
No.
I'm asking him because he's a doctor.
Yeah, they exclude the terminal bones, the major components, maybe 18.
Oh.
I forgot the anatomy.
So,
because the tip of the bones are compact together and they are regarded as only one bone. Like pinyong, you they are collected.
They call coccyx or something.
Coccyx, yeah. They are not included in the body.
So they may be included here. So 18 spine bones, 24 rib bones, 14 breast bones, 1 heart bone, sternum, 2 collar bones, 2 shoulder blade bones, 2 upper arm bones, 2 pairs of forearm bones, 7 neck bones, 2 jaw bones, 1 nose bone, 2 eye bones, 2 ear bones, 1 frontal bone. What's that? Occiput bone.
Occipital?
I don't know. And sensibut bones. So there are exactly 300 bones. Now, The Pali does not mean exactly 300, but it means about 300. So we should correct exactly to about. So there are about 300 bones.
Are these figures from Pali or from Atthagata?
From the commentary.
Oh, from
not from the Pali. Now, if you go back to page 201, please go back to 201, paragraph 89. This is the body's nature. It is a collection of over 300 bones. So there are more than 300 bones. There are. So here, the word does not mean exactly, but it means about 300 bones. Because some bones are not mentioned in the list. So there are more than 300 bones in the body. And then... oh, the bones are described in detail. And then the next one is bone marrow. This is the marrow inside the various bones, as to color, it is white, and so on. It's not difficult to understand. Count the-